Hey folks, this is Christine Blackburn, and I want to personally thank each and every one of you guys for listening to Storyworthy. Storyworthy has more listeners than ever before, and it's thanks to you guys. So please tell a friend, a coworker, or a family member about the Storyworthy podcast, and then we can keep this train rolling. Now let's get on with it.
Hey, it's Michael Stahl David from the film In Your Eyes. I got some acid. Come take it with us at Storyworthy.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finney.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we're coming to you from Haight-Ashbury in San Francisco, man. The starting point of hippie culture, man.
Is it? Is that the starting point,
would you say? Yeah, Haight-Ashbury.
Okay.
That's the Haight, also known as the Haight.
The Haight. And Timothy Leary was there.
That's right, Timothy Leary. It's also called the Upper Haight.
Oh, the Upper Haight. And I always thought it was strange when you see the word Haight, H-A-I-G-H-T.
Yes, exactly.
It doesn't look like the way you say it, does it?
Right, exactly. But if you're high as a kite on, acid, then you don't really care how it's spelled. Why would I say that?
We're coming to you guys from Haight-Ashbury.
Oddly enough, it's spelled with an X, though. I don't know. The whole street system in San Francisco is messed up, dude.
Because our guest tonight, Michael Stahl David, is here. He's an actor, Hannes. A young, successful, hot actor here.
I don't hate him at all. I'm not in any way upset by his career.
He brings forth the topic acid. Now, his first topic was graffiti artist.
Yes.
And then he changed it.
Yeah, because I think acid for our audience is going to skew more toward people who've taken acid than people who've done graffiti. I'm just saying.
Or maybe we have graffiti artists who are on acid when they're doing their art.
I don't know. I'm curious. Write us at info@storyworthy.com.
Oh, look at that.
Storyworthypodcast.com and let us know if you've ever done graffiti. Yes.
Okay, so Michael Stahl David is here. I kept getting his name confused. Was it Michael David Stahl or Michael Stahl David?
Because he wrote it down Michael David Stahl, but that's wrong. It's David Michael Stahl.
No, it's Michael.
It's Michael David Stahl.
No, his name is Michael. Michael Stahl David.
Oh, that's not what you have here. Okay,
well, that's what I have on my paper.
Okay, my paper says Michael David Stahl.
Anyway,
Michael Stahl David. Listen, it's a good thing I'm high on acid because otherwise I would really care about this. By his name is spelled entirely symbols like Prince, so okay. It's kind of a thing.
Michael Stahl David. That's right, because there's like three. Well, it's almost like three first names. That's the thing. Anyway, I recently
who do you know named
him.
Stahl? Like Stalin? That's it. It's just like Stalin.
But it's exactly like that.
That's actually not even his first name, so that made no sense as an insult.
Last night, I go on what they call the Vimeo, and for $5, you can rent right now, on demand,
you
can rent Michael Stahl David's new movie, In Your Eyes. And this is the movie, Hannes, that Bryn Hill
directed. Was it directed by a friend of ours?
Well, he became a friend of ours, Bryn Hill, and it's the great, great movie. It's very, very beautifully shot by Joss Whedon, and he wrote it as well.
Joss Whedon wrote it, yes. It's
set in New Mexico and in New Hampshire. And it's very beautiful. It's a very sweet story. And I'm anxious to talk about it.
I haven't had a chance to watch it yet, but I will.
Well, what's interesting is it's like these two young people, they can kind of feel what the other one's feeling, but yet they live very far apart. So I'm interested in how they act in it.
There's a bit of a supernatural aspect to it.
There's a supernatural aspect, but also how do you act when the other person isn't there? I mean, I suppose the guy, you know, like his
acting partner.
His acting partner. I'm sure Zoe was under the table or something.
Hey,
who's going to be with him?
I don't judge how people get jobs. Jobs in Hollywood, you understand me?
So I'm anxious. Yeah, I'm anxious to talk to him about it. But this film, In Your Eyes, just came out in April of this year, 2014. And then right after it came out, immediately afterwards, Joss Whedon had it self-distributed online instead of doing the theatrical distribution.
Yes.
So you can just see it immediately for $5, and it's beautiful.
No, it's the wave of the future.
It's absolutely
that was some
gorgeous.
TV executive who shall remain unnamed who the other day was quoted saying, God, I wish I worked for Netflix.
Yeah.
It's true. You don't want to work for network television anymore.
No.
It's like a newspaper. It's a dying
it is.
Breed. It's a dying breed. It's a dying medium.
Well, you know,
it's all
going to
be direct.
You want people to read the book. You make a movie, you want people to see the movie. You know what I mean? So this, we want people to see it, so make it available. I think that's the key.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, here's
our guest, he was also a lead in Cloverfield.
Yes. Well, he's done a lot of things.
A lot of things, yes. Black Donnellys. I remember that show.
Black Donnellys. That got canceled early on, unfortunately.
Too bad. It was an anti-Irish bias by the network.
Mm.
Not enough Irish. That's what they don't like.
And the Cloverfield, that's a J.J. Abrams thing, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I always wondered if the if it was named after the Cloverfield Avenue exit on the Santa Monica Freeway. That's what I think.
I think
when they were writing that, probably taking acid because they're Hollywood hippies, every day they would probably go to their office and see the Cloverfield exit and go, man, that's a great name. Nobody will know what that is. I don't know why. I'm assuming everyone's high.
I think Cloverfield, Thomas, is anytime you get off a freeway and like the roadway
yes.
goes in four different directions. That's a Cloverfield.
It is.
That's a Cloverleaf.
Okay, now Sean Merrick speaks up.
Sean Merrick, our sound engineer who doesn't have a microphone, likes to shout across the room because it's so professional. Yes, I'm kidding.
So
I'm kidding.
Feldman,
he's going to stab me in the back of the neck.
The topic acid, and that makes me think that he dropped acid. That's
perhaps, but I think more importantly, I need to know if you dropped acid because you've done a lot of stuff and I've done nothing.
I've never dropped acid.
That is very hard for me to believe.
Well, believe it. I've done mushrooms and things that have definitely taken my feet off the ground, but acid is not one of those things.
Mushrooms, is that?
Now, here's the thing.
I don't like the taste of mushrooms.
Acid, it's colorless, it's odorless, it's a tasteless solid, and it's typically delivered orally by putting it on those little papers, right, Hannes? Blotter paper. In a sugar cube.
I like how you're asking me. Like, I have actually, I do. Yeah, the sugar cube thing. I've seen it. I think here's what I know about acid. I saw it done on Mad Men.
Mm.
That's my window to the acid world is watching. Actually, I believe that, what character was it? Roger Sterling takes it and he has a vision of himself and decides he and his wife both take acid and then they get a divorce. Because they realize that their marriage isn't working.
Now, LSD is another word for acid. It means the same thing. It stands for lysergic acid diethylamide, LSD. And it's extremely potent, as you know. 20 to 30 micrograms is the threshold. That's very low.
That seems, the micrograms, that sounds small.
Yeah, it's just like on your tongue. I guess that's hence the blotter paper. That takes a very, very small amount, right?
Yeah, exactly.
LSD is also non-addictive.
You know who loved LSD?
Who?
Cary Grant.
Is that right?
Yes. This was back when LSD was first brought in, and it was therapeutic.
Hmm.
So you would take it in your psychiatrist's office so that you could really delve into things.
Right.
And Cary Grant thought it was the best thing that ever happened to him.
No, that's very interesting. Did he do it his whole life? Or?
I don't know. By the time he did it, he was probably, 60 years old.
It can cause adverse psychiatric reactions like anxiety, paranoia, and delusions. I also understand it can make you rip all your clothes off and run down the street.
Well, I know you're hoping that that's what our guest will do, rip all of his clothes off.
Listen, this is not true. Don't listen to him, Michael.
It's totally true.
I'm a middle-aged woman in Hollywood. It's, I'm 95.
Middle-aged women in Hollywood never lust after young, good-looking actors. That never happens. Why?
I'm a 50-year-old woman in Los Angeles. Please. It's like I'm in my 90s. By the way, I'm not 50, but I'm just saying that because I'm going to be.
That's what I love. Oh, she's been like, I'm 48, but I'm going to start telling people I'm 50, so it won't hurt so much when I get there. But when you come in, she's like, I'm 50. I'm not really 50. I'm not really 50.
Oh, you make me laugh. Hey, I also watched our guest tonight, Michael Saul David. I watched him in this new movie called Mutual Friends. It's just adorable. This plot about all these 30-something-year-old kids, and then they're in an apartment in New York having a party, and somebody has invited... like the ex of somebody. And so
very
uncomfortable. And it's very beautiful. I mean, the picture, it's like very slick and it's good looking and people are drinking and,
Is this one of those, is it space place?
One
of those,
you want to be in that
one of those enormous New York apartments
like
that doesn't exist.
Nobody could ever afford.
No, it's a small apartment. Okay, good.
So that's, he's got that going on, Mutual Friends. All right, you guys, before we get to our storyteller, I did want to mention that if you'd like to support Storyworthy, and that would be great.
Yeah, seriously. Go to storyworthypodcast.com, click on the Patreon link. And go to patreon.com and look at our video.
Why not?
And consider, give us $5 a month. Give
there
us $2 a month. Give us $10 a month. A couple of bucks that ain't going to hurt you, but it's going to make this show last.
That's right. That's exactly right. And feel free to follow us on Twitter at Storyworthy. And, of course, you can always email us at info@storyworthypodcast.com.
Tell us about your acid trips. We want to read long, detailed explanations of what happened. No punctuation. or
anything. Oh, I see. To our fans. If you've been on acid, yes. please write to us.
Because that'll really be helpful since we're already doing this now and that will happen in the future.
All right,
okay,
you guys. Wherever
don't
you
send
are,
us any of your...
Wherever you are, take that tab of acid right about now because Michael Saul David is on his way here. Next time on Storyworthy, we have host of Cooper Talk, Steve Cooper.
And I'll be talking about my worst job ever.
That's next time on Storyworthy.
Hi, it's Naomi Grossman, Pepper from American Horror Story Asylum, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
We're back. Okay, we're coming down now. We've gone to Golden Gate Park, and we're just kind of looking up at the seagulls, man. For some reason, the Golden Gate Bridge is undulating. I don't know if there's an earthquake or it's just part of my trip.
Hey, listen, I saw the dawn of the Planet of the Apes yesterday.
Yeah.
And that takes place in San Francisco. It's just fascinating. Wow.
San Francisco gets so cool. Destroyed a lot. Destroyed by Godzilla.
Yeah.
Destroyed by the apes.
But there's something about seeing, that skyline and the bridge. And then, you know, in this movie, it's like post-apocalyptic. And so it's, you know, in complete disarray. And, you know, you see Nob Hill and the whole city. And it's... But it's wrong, right? Because it's destroyed. It's fantastic.
I know. Yeah. When I was a kid, all I knew about San Francisco was the streets of San Francisco.
Right.
Carl Malden and a young Michael Douglas and fighting crime.
The car would come up and over the.
Apparently, you cannot drive in San Francisco without going 70 miles an hour and flying up over really high and then boom.
Yeah.
And it cut to the inside.
That was, every Bullet. Single. Remember the Mustang?
That's where it started. That was Steve McQueen.
Steve McQueen and Bullet.
He was, right. But do you know who he was chasing? He was in a Mustang. He was chasing a Dodge Charger. And he never would have caught it because a Dodge Charger was a real live muscle car and a Ford Mustang was bullshit. It looked good and the engineering was nothing, man.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Hannes Finney on cars.
Yes, exactly.
All right, you guys. Michael Saul David's here right now. He's an actor and he recently appeared in Mutual Friends. I just mentioned that to you earlier, Hannes.
Yes.
And he was also the star of In Your Eyes. He also starred and directed the web series Michael Saul David Behind the Star on Crackle. Do you watch Crackle?
Crackle, that's Crackle? Where, Jerry Seinfeld's show was on Crackle.
Yeah, the comedians in cars getting coffee. Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, but he's doing all sorts of things, and he's on fire. And you can
he's on
find,
fire, I tell
you. You can find Michael Saul David on Facebook, and he actually responds.
He will accept your friendness.
He will.
Do it now before he hits 5,000. He's probably at 493 right now.
We're never going to hear from him again.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, you
he's going to tell you to kiss his ass as he meteorically rises
in
Facebook.
Put your hands together for Michael Saul David.
Hi, guys. Hi, thanks. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thanks for having me. Yeah, so this place takes place in Chicago, where I'm from, and I was 16 years old, and I wasn't even supposed to be out that night. I was grounded, but I snuck out of the house because Eugene Westbrook was having a house party at his house. This is one of the kids from drama, and so I sneak over to his house, and I get there, and it's a bunch of friends there, a bunch of people there, upperclassmen there. And I'm getting drunk, I'm having a great time, and I've got a pretty good buzz on. And then I see some of the upperclassmen in the hallway, and they're standing around this paper, this blotter paper. And I hear that it's Eugene's older brother's acid that he was supposed to sell, but that was very weak. So they were just divvying it up and taking it, very carefully cutting it with scissors. You mentioned earlier that it's incredibly potent. I was thinking on the way over here how to describe the size. I mean, an appropriate dose is about the size of a single Rice Krispie, okay? I walk by drunk. I'm like, oh, it's acid. It's weak. That's awesome, man. And just rip a chunk off and stick it in my mouth without thinking. Probably the size of, like, a stamp, you know, big. And then just, like, you know, waltz down the hallway. Woo! And I go and find the girl that I was sort of seeing at the time named Danica Kopanky. Danica Kopanky was a girl who drew big smiley faces on her jeans, like on each thigh, and was straight edge, was the stage manager of the first play I ever did, and her mother tutored me in math, okay? And we sort of made out and stuff. So I find Danica, we go off to Jean's mom's room, we're making out on the bed, and that's when it hits me. And I feel like there are rats crawling through my veins. Now, I'd tripped before, and I'd experienced the sort of, like, giggly, wavy, everything's funny, things are weird. I'm having a fun time trying to put words together. This was not bad. This was, there's rats in my veins very quickly, and then every sound. I remember lying there and being like, what is that? What is that sound? What is that sound? What is that sound? And she was like, it's the party downstairs. It's people hanging out. I was like, I just have to go to sleep. I have to go to sleep, which, of course, didn't work. At this point, basically, I black out. I mean, from my memory. I don't remember what happens. I remember vomiting, right? Vomiting and her in the bathroom, her trying to take care of me. Hours are passing. The night is getting late. And then at some point, all I could think was, I have to fight this. I have to fight this. And like many house parties that start off kind of, you know, normal enough, like by the later they get, the address gets circulated, you know, pre-text, just like word of mouth, you know, carrier pigeon. So like all these graffiti kids had crashed the party. So now there are all these like other kids there, you know. And I remember seeing this dude, I-Rock, who tagged I-Rock. And if you asked him why, he'd be like, cuz fool, I-Rock. And he was this kind of like tough kid, you know, Puerto Rican kid. And he was smoking a cigarette. And I was like, oh, it all comes down to the cigarette. I just need a cigarette. If I have a cigarette. And I get a cigarette. Next thing I know, it's just like a single butt in my hand. It just evaporates. And then I-Rock is like, hey, man, let me get my lighter back. And then I'm like, this is it. I have to stand up. I have to fight this trip. And I stand up. And I'm like, you ain't getting your lighter back, motherfucker. And he looks at me for a second, contemplating, like, you know, beating the shit out of me, I'm sure. And he's just like, you know what? You're lucky you're high right now. You are lucky you're high. And so at this point, I'm like, all right, I'm good. I'm fighting the trip. I'm ready to leave. Danica's like, are you sure? I'm like, yeah, let me just get my bike and I'm going to be on my way. I was only like a mile from home. It was dawn at this. I mean, it was like 7, 8 in the morning. So I remember she's like, okay, and says bye to me. And I'm like walking with my bike. And I remember I get to an alleyway and I'm like, hold up, alleyway. This is dangerous. And I like I dismount and very carefully like walk across the alley. And then I just drop the bike on the sidewalk. I see this random vestibule to this apartment building. I just walk up the steps, open the door of the vestibule, and sit down in the hallway. Now, at this point, my parents have woken up and realized that I'm not home. Again, I've snuck out, you know. And I remember my mom telling me that when she told me her side of the story that, like, they were like, well, should we call the cops or start calling around to hospitals? They're like, well, let's go get some bagels and then if he's not back by then. So I'm sitting in the vestibule on another planet. I look out the door, the glass door, and there are my parents outside. And I'm like, oh my God, they planned this whole thing. They orchestrated this whole thing. And I come outside and they're like, Michael, whose house is that? And I'm like, who the fuck cares? And I make a snowball and I throw it at the house to illustrate who the fuck cares. And at this point, I see them kind of have a little conference and I hear them whispering. And my dad's like, well, do you want to walk him home? And she's like, well, you're the one who didn't notice about it. You're the one who didn't. And I don't know what to make of that. So then my dad and I start walking down the street to my house. And I, you know, something that happens when you're tripping really hard is that you can't choose a word to make a sentence with. Every sentence begins with a word, but there's a choice. And how could you proceed? The only way I could communicate, I decided, was to sing in a reggae song, like a reggae rap song. So my dad's like, Michael, what happened? I'm like, well, I went to the party and I had a drink and then I smoked some reefer and a rick-a-dink-a-dink. I mean, I don't even, not that that worked either. Literally, that was the tune, like I remember. So we finally get back to my house. And another thing that being high on a psychedelic does is that every visual symbol, every idea has this exponential meaning. It's like a pebble dropping in a pond and the ripple effect of it. It's like you see something and it stands for, whew. So I come inside and I see my little brother, Andrew, sitting on the floor playing Nintendo. I'm like, oh my God, that's my childhood. That's my childhood. And then they're like, I still am not saying anything. My brother's like wide-eyed, terrified, looking at me. My parents are like, so Michael, you know, what happened? He's like, I don't know. He can't remember. You know what? Put on some of his rap music. Maybe that'll bring him back. But they can't find that. So instead they put on The Bobs, which is, if you don't, The Bobs are an a cappella group who make the sounds of an entire band with their mouths. This is some trippy shit. It's like, and literally the words were like, it's not in stairwells, no, no, it's not in the alleyway. I was like, what the, this is talking about my night. They like start going through my pockets. They're like, pull out a dollar. They're like, I'm like, no, it's not about the money, man. It's not about that life. You know, it's like everything. So I'm not getting anywhere. So my mom's like, well, let's put them in the bath. Which, I'm 16, I don't take baths, you know, so nothing would make me feel more like a mental patient. I mean, and I go in there and I'm sitting naked in the bathtub looking at my like shriveled scrotum, just confused. And I come out, I put on a robe, I put on my mother's robe. Now I'm in a robe padding around my house. I look into my parents' eyes and they look so worried and concerned, and I see the lines kind of, you know, around their eyes, and I start, and that's when I, in my mind, I realize, oh wow, I've been tripping for a week. This has been happening for a week, and they're trying to get me to remember who I am. And my, look at them, they've been through the ringer this week, you know, like that's in my head. And so, you know, basically at that point, I pat around in the robe for a little while, and I just kind of start to mellow down where I can, I remember now Danica, and I remember, oh my God, so I make some phone, I just get on the phone, I'm able to articulate, I'm okay, bye-bye, and yeah, and I came down, thankfully, because not all people do, and I didn't do acid again for months.
For months, yeah. Have you dropped acid since then?
I mean, I haven't done it since I was a teenager, but at that age, yeah, I did do it again after that.
Wow.
Yeah, I was crazy.
Did you at least do the proper portion?
Yes.
When you did it again?
Yes, I did.
Which you considered to be,
and I still had
a
bad trip.
It's like, I'm all square now. I just took the right amount of
that. Yeah, right, yeah.
Now, I know this about you, Michael Stahl David. Your parents are physicians.
That's right.
So they are... At least maybe when you saw them, you felt like, well, they're going to be
capable.
That's
why. Well, thank God that they were, I mean, yes, they were, they're physicians.
That's why
they
didn't take you to the hospital.
That's why they didn't take me to the hospital.
Because they knew what to do.
Also, it came out later that my dad had been a fan of the LSD.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
When he was a young
man. So he
recognized. When it was first coming out and, you know, his kind of geeky science community was into it. And
that's
so
what I'm saying. It was medical when it first started. Yeah. It was like, oh, well, this is a way for people to break through barriers in psychology. And that was why Cary Grant and all these other people were doing it. So it's like, yeah, it wasn't a recreational drug.
I mean, it was also a recreational drug.
No, I know, but it became
But it wasn't
like,
a controlled thing, and it wasn't associated with, like, raves or whatever it's associated with now. And
yeah.
Yeah, and thankfully they didn't freak out on me because the aggression or the anger or all that, like, if I had gone into a shame spiral in that state, in that fragile state, it probably would have been
Well,
rough.
That's funny because that's what Timothy Leary, he calls the effects of acid. He says it depends on the set and the setting, the set being the general mindset of the user and the setting being the physical and social environment in which the drug's effects are experienced. So you were luckily in a safe place.
Eventually.
Well, eventually. I mean, thank goodness they found... I mean,
you're not literally... Your lighter back.
This is on Sheffield Street.
But what vestibule is
exactly?
This?
It's a random one. It truly was random.
I don't know why. I'm so weird that what I thought is because I'm from Milwaukee, so I want to find out what part of Chicago you're from. But the Midwest people, like, there are vestibules. LA, there's no vestibules.
Right.
Everything's open. No. There's not like.
Well, we don't need that. That
no, what I'm saying is,
the
but there's a thing
indoors.
Where you. Right. Have this transitional state, like you're in the building, but you're not actually in the building.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, it's what neighborhood was this in? Like, what part?
This is in Lakeview, like Lakeview Lincoln Park. This is like Diversey and Sheffield. So
that's very suburban, isn't it?
It's not suburban. No,
it's in the city.
It's in the city.
Not dead in the city, but like it's a
nice neighborhood.
It's a nice neighborhood. And it's kind of like Las Feliz, maybe.
Yeah, it's kind of like,
yeah, it's like a Las Feliz.
I could live there. Is there a House of Pies?
I'm sure there is.
There's a house of pierogies probably on every corner.
And what did Danica say the next day or whenever you talked to her?
Danica,
again?
Yeah.
What was her last name?
Danica Kopanky.
What could you name her? If your last name was Kopanky, what could you name your child that it would ever work out all right?
Not hanky, obviously.
Hanky-ka-panky?
Anything with a K, I think, would be rough, too.
Carol Kapanky.
Yeah,
Helen, I don't know. Yeah, you got to be... It's just funny because it's like what you do.
Coco.
Like, what I find amusing about stories about high school is... Nobody ever tells you a story that says my friend or my friend Bob.
You got to drop
everybody's
name.
Full name.
What
always
is that?
And for some reason, those names are always hilarious.
Hilarious.
And again, who did you steal
Kimmy
a hamster
Eddie.
With?
Kimmy Eddie and Joan Kelly. Yeah. But
yeah.
I
it's like
it for the book.
It's like.
Sometimes in life you have to change names.
Yes, it's true. I mean, I figured this doesn't really reflect badly on her. So
no.
on the way over
no,
here.
No, she but, turn came out. Well, yeah. IROC, did you run into IROC again?
IROC, you know, IROC is still kicking. Yeah, he's doing his thing. You know, that was at the beginning of my graffiti career. So then I, you know, hung out, spent a fair amount of time with him, actually.
Yeah, let's hear about your graffiti
so
career.
You actually used to do graffiti.
Yeah, I was a big tagger in Chicago. And this is not the Banksy street art sort of stuff. This is everywhere from the little crappy scrawl that you see in, like, a bathroom to, like, the bigger, colorful, you know, letters.
So is this something
block
that,
letters and...
Because I honestly don't know. If you're a tagger, is anybody paying you? You're doing this on your own? You're doing this
You're trying to literally put your mark on the world. It's teenage, like, peeing on a wall, in a way.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it is... It's about identity, I think. You know, like for me, I was sort of I was a nerdy kid. I went to like an all Latino grammar school, and so I was kind of this reverse minority.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I had this.
Did you learn Spanish?
I learned Spanish. I speak Spanish. Yeah.
Oh, perfecto.
Perfecto. Yeah.
Perfecto.
Oh well, yeah. Wow. For Spanish, let's do it. Perfecto.
Donde está?
Taco, por favor.
Yeah. We were doing Spanish earlier when we were recording today. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So I think for me it was a way of like rebranding.
So what was your tag?
Like, so my
what
tag
was
commie because I was big into like leftist politics and like revolution.
C-O-M-M-I-E.
You can spell it any way you want if you're a tagger. So I cut one M out. So it'd just be C-O-M-I-E because who wants to draw two M's in a row?
So okay. It was commie, basically.
It was commie.
People were hearing.
It was
dirty.
So people were reading it.
Filthy.
And, well, no, that's U-M. Duh.
Yeah, right.
Like the
it was
come and go.
And then it was K-A-H-M-E also.
No, this is so fascinating to me. No, I've never met a tagger. And when did you start? How old were you?
I was like probably 15 or 14.
And what were you using? Paint?
Everything. Spray paint, markers. Sometimes you'd get this shoe polish stuff that was really hard to get off.
Smelly, I can imagine.
Smelly, yeah.
And did your parents know you were doing this?
Yeah, I mean, I got arrested right away. I was terrible at it.
Well,
at
you
first,
were, but you were under 18, so this is
I was under 18, okay. Yeah.
And so where were you... You weren't in broad daylight.
Well, yeah, no, normally you weren't. Sometimes you'd try to do some afternoon tags after school or something, be slick, you know. But or you'd go to abandoned railroad tracks where there's an abandoned back of a factory and there's trees overgrowing and it's sort of this your own little hideout, own little playground. Yeah. And you can just paint and smoke weed and chill and it's sort of like your little escape, you know.
I want to be a graffiti artist now. Okay, go ahead.
And
so,
yeah, you've got the hangout and the weed
really
part
about,
down. So.
When did you get arrested, though? You said you got arrested right away.
Yeah, I mean, the first time I was rollerblading with my, like, rollerblading crew, I was also, like,
sorry,
a pretty badass blader.
Come out and play. I can just see you going down the street.
Not nearly that tough. Okay, no.
So you're rollerblading.
With my little crew downtown Chicago. And we're doing
You do not have a helmet on.
No. Much to my mother's. I was
helmets are for squares, man.
No, my mom would not let me leave the house without the helmet. And then I would take it off as soon as I got in the alley behind the house and hide it.
Yeah.
Behind the dumpster.
Clearly.
Yeah. Because I wanted to be cool on my rollerblades. Doing my sick grinds. Yeah. Doing my spins.
And you've got your spray paint.
I got my little marker. We're doing a little tag.
You decided you're a commie.
This is before I even figured that out, you know? It was Decoy Skate Crew.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah.
14 years old. 14 years old. It's like literally the first time I've ever tagged on anything.
Okay.
And these, like, undercover cops pull right up. And and we're right over the Chicago River. I throw the marker into the river. And he's like, nice throw, asshole. You're the first one to go to jail. And they put me in the back of this unmarked car with my rollerblades on.
Yeah.
And then
because he wanted to represent in the holding cell.
Yeah, well, and then they rolled me through the precinct to the little cage.
That is so humorous. Yeah. Truly, you had your rollerblades on the whole way as they put you in the cell.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
And it wasn't like, you know, and there's a good thing there wasn't like tough people in the cell.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Right, yeah.
Okay, then they call your parents. They say, look. We caught your kid. There's been an incident. You got to come down.
They come down.
Then what?
And then I say, man, I remember saying, you know, I'm glad I got arrested now so that I don't do this anymore because I could see this being really addictive.
You're such a liar.
I felt that. Actually, at the time, I was like, I hadn't gotten really into it yet.
Yeah.
But once you start, I mean, the first summer that I really went hard into it, so, I mean, something also just to, if I can quickly explain about Chicago and graffiti, you have all these, everyone rides the elevated train. There's all these rooftops that you can see perfectly from the train, and they are covered in graffiti for many, many years. Really good graffiti, you know, as graffiti goes, colorful and intricate. And so if you're starting out, you can't go, graffiti those walls. Those are taken by the people who are good. Then the city starts doing graffiti blasters. They start painting over it, buffing it. So they buff all the walls. So all the walls are brown, right? When
they,
I start.
They basically sandblast.
They spray this paint. Yeah, the big spray. Paint. And it's so all those walls are now brown. Some stuff that had been there for 10 years or whatever is all gone.
Yeah.
So now it's a blank canvas. I get out there, and in one summer, I've got, like, all these rooftops along, like, a three-mile stretch of the Red Line in Chicago painted. And so it's, like, commie everywhere.
Wow.
And so then people are coming up to me, and they're like, damn, commie, you've been getting up.
Yeah.
And a little 15-year-old ego, 16-year-old, it's like, boom, yeah, like, I have this other thing that I do. It's like, you know,
absolutely,
people know it. And this is before social media, which I think really, there's no other, like, social media is a landscape in which you can maneuver, make jokes, be a part, represent a part of yourself, and your peers are going to see it, and a lot of, like, a broad audience can see it. And
it's funny that you're not into that now very much. You're not on Twitter or anything.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on Instagram, but yeah, it all makes me anxious.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, how long, now it sounds like, you were quite a little handful for your parents there. When did you straighten up and fly right, son? When did you stop all these shenanigans?
Yeah, it was rough.
Yeah, like when did you feel like you stopped doing all... I mean, just...
Almost when I was like 19. Late 18, 19.
Found acting then. It must.
I found acting, yeah, in high school, and I was sort of ambivalent about it. I thought I wanted to, like, teach history and be kind of this, like, you know, Dead Poets kind of teacher.
Yeah,
you know what
cool,
I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
Patches on your blazer.
Yeah.
Standing on the desk. Captain
inspiring,
Captain,
you know, the sort of downtrodden youth. You
see, what you didn't realize is you really just wanted to play a teacher in a movie.
Right, that's
exactly.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's like when I was a kid, I want to move to New York City. Right. No, I wanted to live in a Woody Allen movie. I didn't know what living in New York would actually mean.
Right.
So it's like, exactly. So where did you start in, like, what's your first professional gig you got paid for?
I think maybe the first paid gig I got cast in a film. My drama teacher, like, was connected to Freddie Rodriguez from 6 Feet Under, who was the guy on 6 Feet. He went to my high school, and so there had been some people who had gone through there.
Yeah.
So, anyways, I auditioned for this film that was written by John Hughes' son called Newport South.
Okay.
And it was like a Disney movie, it must have been like a pretty big budget Disney movie. And I played, like, you know, one of the dudes in the football crew, like Rossetti. And I had two lines. And I was on set for weeks. It was terribly organized.
Was it shooting in Chicago?
It was out in the suburbs in the winter. And I would just sit around on set doing nothing. And I didn't care about it at all. I mean, I would go out and do graffiti at night and be like on 2 hours of sleep and then like show up to set. I mean, I wasn't invested yet. And then I got hooked up with Steppenwolf Theater.
Yes.
And then I sort of was like, oh, this is what
this
is.
And that's out of Chicago.
That's one of the best theater companies.
That's out of Chicago.
You've got a lot of theater. Yeah. I was looking at your resume.
Gary Sinise started it.
Steppenwolf
is
amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but it seems like when you, just to back up a second, because you were talking about social media and how now that you're a little bit anxious about it, but it seems like as a graffiti artist, you wanted attention. Right?
I surely
your
did.
Commies everywhere, and that
I
makes
still
you
do.
Feel good and proud about it. Right. And then you become an actor, and my gosh, that's a need of approval more than any other career I can think of besides stand up comedian. And so then you get that, but now you're getting places, and you are getting pretty hot, but you don't want to play with the Twitter. You play with the Instagram.
I think what I feel like is that, I haven't looked at a lot of Twitter, but what I understand is that people are most successful when they're able to, like, sort of be fluidly themselves in those characters or whatever, 240.
Yeah.
And I would want everyone to be too good. It's like, I can't say anything. Like, every joke has to be... Yeah. I would want to use it for jokes,
well,
really.
It's true. Yeah. Well, there are a lot of people, obviously, using it for comedy, but Twitter is so precise. It is. It's true, because within that 140 characters, like, every space counts, because a space is a character.
Right.
So it's like, it's very important. But as a graffiti artist and as an actor, I would think that you would get into it. And maybe you will.
Yeah, maybe I will.
Did you buy stock in Twitter and I didn't know about it? Because you're really pushing on the... But the Instagram is the new thing for the kids.
So maybe it is. Maybe Instagram is newer than what I'm thinking.
It's the newer. And that's... I'm so dumb that I... Okay. So obviously there's a picture on Instagram. Do you...
And you caption
it. Are there captions? You add captions to it.
Yeah,
okay.
Do you have a certain stream of Instagram going? I mean, certain subject?
Yeah, no. Like, that's the thing. It's like, it's my life. I try to have it be funny. Then every once in a while, you do want to promote something. But, you know... It's a funny thing. Like,
I'm just curious. So we just took a picture with you holding the Storyworthy sign. Now, if you put that up on Instagram, at least it says something in one picture. I mean, in one photo, I mean, you can caption it. But also, I mean, part of the reason we're holding this sign up is that you can visually just see it. And you'll respond. And as I understand, people are getting paid now to advertise with products behind their Instagram pictures. You know,
like famous people get paid to show up, like Kim Kardashian or any of those people.
So
will get paid $10,000 to just show up at the club. So they don't have to Instagram it. Yeah. They don't have to talk about it. They don't have to advertise. They will be there. They just are there.
So it's product placement.
Yeah.
So my question to you, Michael, is will you start graffitiing Storyworthy all over the 10 freeway? I mean, this is really...
Yes. You're like, any way I can get this out there, guys.
This picture is going
to
be, caption is going to be, here's how I wasted my afternoon.
Yeah.
That's right. Exactly.
Tell me,
this is my first podcast, you guys.
Oh my God, your podcast virginity.
I listen to a lot of podcasts. This is exciting.
We're actually more organized than most of them.
Yeah,
I know they're going to find that very hard to believe.
We're in a place. We're in a building.
There
was an elevator and a security guy.
Yeah, no, it was super official.
We're going to take care of your
if you come on 3 years
across
ago.
The street from a soup plantation, which has to be the worst name for a soup place
it
I could ever think
so
of. It's like,
strange.
What's got soup? We got something with soup.
What do you grow out there
farm,
on your plantation?
Yeah,
soup,
you grow
something
soup?
Friendly. Soup plantation.
Yes.
There you go. That's
I know.
Nice. No nasty
it's
connotations
time to
there.
The soup.
Exactly. The original title was Soup Slavery.
Yeah.
And they
soup.
Were going to
be Soup Gulag.
Gonna,
and then they
were going to bring in a little. Yeah.
Listen, what happened to your love of graffiti? How do you stop?
Do you paint at all? Do you do anything like visual
art?
That
was the thing, and something to sort of understand is like I wasn't really interested in visual art. That's kind of maybe sounds weird, but graffiti is a pretty narrow parameters.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the Twitter of visual art. It's like you're gonna do these letters, you're gonna do them in kind of a certain style, and you're gonna try to put your own thing on it.
So it really was about. The attention.
It was about the attention. It was about the adrenaline. Mm-hmm. And what I've learned about, I've done some stuff about adolescent psychology. I mean, your overall dopamine levels as a teenager are lower than normal. And then when you have like a high risk or adrenaline experience, it spikes like way higher than usual. So it's like really easy to get
because
addicted to adrenaline.
Because the brain is still developing as a teenager.
Yeah, and specifically to kind of push away from the herd. I think like biologically. Growing up, it's like, or coming up as a species, you have to leave the herd to kind of propagate the species forward.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to be in some risky situations. Mm-hmm. So risky behavior becomes like, has a greater reward during those years.
Mm.
It's like why everyone wants a skateboard,
Yeah, I'm just saying with that logic, you would think that a lot of people taking risks and taking chances all the time, that would put you, at the top of the world.
Yeah.
Well, that's only if it works out. The terrible truth is most people do risky things and pay
crash
the price for them. Nothing nothing good ever comes out of it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there were kids who I knew, or knew of, who were, someone got hit by a train.
Oh, my God.
Electrocuted by the third rail. I mean, not to mention, like...
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. The L in Chicago, it's like you could fall off. I mean, if you were tagging the L, you could fall off the edge of it.
One guy I knew who I was actually good friends with fell 3 stories and luckily broke both his arms, and he was a break dancer. And luckily, I can't help but laugh at that.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
cool
managed to, luckily survive and finish high school and do his stuff. But, I mean, there was a lot. I knew it was not something I could do for long. I knew I wanted to go to college and do other stuff. Yeah. And
I think that your Twitter name should just be @commie, and then we're there,
Yeah.
Can you do that? Is that, would that be, no, that's too far behind you.
It's so far behind me.
Okay.
So you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, that's like a
is
whole.
Is Stahl David the last name of both your parents?
That's it. Yeah.
And so it's, and has it always Stahl been Stahl David?
Yeah, it's hyphenated. Yeah. You can't
my daughter's middle name is my last name, but it's not hyphenated.
Okay.
Now that you know, I'm that's sure
nice.
You're thrilled.
No, that's good for her. Keep it organized.
Yeah,
keep
I
it in
like
the middle.
It that way too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like to just disregard my whole last name. What's going on?
Yeah.
Let me ask you something. I have it written right here. Have you ever had a problem drinking on set the night before you shoot? Not drinking on set, but drinking on when you're doing a film shoot or you're working on a television show the night before you shoot. Besides
not really.
Being an extra.
But did Bryn tell you the story of what happened on In Your Eyes?
No, tell me.
This was messed up. I mean, this was really fun. I mean, I'm not a huge drinker, so that I don't have that problem. But there was we had a fun crew on In Your Eyes. It's like it's an indie movie, so there's not no money, but there's not much,
yeah.
And so it's like younger people, and we're shooting out in this like on this mesa in about an hour outside LA, and where my character has their trailer. We're doubling for New Mexico out there. And basically, we finished around shooting at 2 a.m., and they decided they were going to spend the night on set that mm-hmm. night. They were going to project a movie onto the camera truck and
fun.
Hang out, right? So we do that. It's fun. People are doing a little smoking, a little drinking happening, nothing too crazy. and I go to sleep around 4 because I'm like, I got to get up and shoot tomorrow. I wake up at like 10:30, and like music is blasting. I come outside. We had this this like 90s like Mazda Miata convertible or something that was a character car, like what they call a picture car used in the movie, right? They have turned it into a pool and are sitting in it. Literally, the head grip has like clipped these big garbage bag things all through the inside, and they're sitting in this cold water. The sound guy's buzzed a mohawk on his head. They've got sunblock over the faces, and they're still drinking.
I love crew
like,
guys.
I'm like, where
man.
Did the water come from? And they point like 100 yards away. There's like a water cooler on the on the property that they siphoned water from.
Oh my gosh, I love crew guys. They're so capable.
It was really fun.
They can really make.
Oh yeah,
happen.
And when that, I mean, super dangerous. This is a picture car. We haven't shot it out yet. I mean, we still have to use it. But when he took that rigging off, bone dry inside.
Clear. Yeah, yeah. Totally dry.
No, Christine's ex is a crew guy. He's a gaffer.
Oh, cool.
And like.
They're very capable. No,
yeah, they always have something on the belt.
Yeah,
they're like Batman.
Something they can
there's
do.
There's always like pulling out something out of utility
or they're
belt.
Repelling, or they're just doing amazing things.
Yeah. Masculine guys.
Tell
Batman.
Folks what. Yeah, definitely masculine guys. Tell me, tell the folks out there what a picture car is.
It just means a car that's going to be used in a motion picture.
I know, but it's a working car.
It's a working car. It's something that's on camera. It's something that's going to be featured that you're going to see.
But I always remember I dated this other guy who worked on Thelma and Louise, and he told me about the car at the end when that
–
was it the Cadillac they were in, Thelma and Louise? What
I believe
were they
it's a Cadillac convertible,
and
I
they
believe.
Go, and it goes
they
shooting
go off the edge,
off the cliff. And what he said that was they had – the car was totally – empty. There was no engine in it. It was just a shell of a car. And then they had the mannequins in that looked like the actresses.
Yeah.
And then they literally pulled this car back like on a rubber band, as it were, and fucking boing and flew it off this cliff.
And you better
fabulous.
Get that
and
in one take.
Shot.
Yeah.
One
take.
Shot to make that happen. So I was thinking that would be called a picture car too.
Yeah.
Although that would almost be, that's almost a giant prop.
Prop
when it's no longer a car. Well, but what I love is like, you're like, they turned a Miata into a swimming pool. They turned me out into a jacuzzi. That's the smallest car in the world.
Yeah, pool,
there's like two guys sitting there in each other's urine.
Right, yeah.
Was this, I think it's called Mystery or Magic Mesa?
I don't think
Because I shot something for House there once. It's like literally a mesa now near Lancaster or something, right?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Were you guys making it look like New Mexico as well?
No, it was, but it was like there's not mesas in California very much, but this is like... All you do is shoot stuff out there, and you can look. Yeah,
like
depending
Arizona
on where you turn the camera, you can look like you are in the middle of nowhere. You're not quite in the middle of nowhere, but it's close.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were doing it was like some sort of testing, like a nuclear bomb site. And yeah, that must be where it is because Mesa is. It's the only one I've ever heard of.
You mean
it's
in the
California.
Episode House?
He's a doctor who.
Yeah, it's where they were shot. Yeah, it was shot. It was somebody.
They
of
get
course,
deep into it, man.
Yeah. Falls down into
that
a...
Show, that show, House, it always, like, the storyline, you can almost, like, if you had a button by your TV, you can almost hit the button when all of a sudden, oh, here we go. You know, because he always goes into this whole funk thing and...
Right,
you know,
no, he would seem to have solved it right before the second commercial break. Solved it. Oh, wait, no, that turned out that wasn't the solution. Go to commercial. Come back. We talk for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
We think we've solved it. No, last act, 5 minutes later, somebody says, you know, I eat a lot of carrots. Cue the slow zoom in on house carrots.
Yeah.
Boing, boing, and he would go and solve the problem. But I did this other thing with Hugh Laurie.
I guess
Laurie.
That's all television, though.
I know it's formula.
There's just one episode where they figure it out before the first commercial break, and then they spend the rest of the episode just singing karaoke.
Yeah, they're just in the break room sipping coffee. That's all they do. Yeah. Like an episode of Puddin'. They just drink coffee. He was. I did this thing where I was the patient that he wanted to take a nap on his client or clinic time, so he drugs me. So I'm asleep. Come down to like our face, like he's asleep. And he ended up, he was basically directing the whole episode, even though Hugh Laurie was the nicest guy I've ever met.
Yeah.
Fantastically talented. So
I've heard great things about him.
And I'm nobody, right? And he's talking to me. He's like, if you could take your jacket and put it on your underneath, that would be fantastic. It's like he doesn't even have to talk to me, let alone be nice telling me. He can just. Tell me, move the jacket. It's like he was so sweet. It was unbelievable.
Nice. Yeah. You meet good people, right?
Yeah.
Makes you feel good.
I think maybe actors have been there so they know how to.
But that's true. Because empathetic, he became a star when he was in his 40s.
Right.
He had been working. I mean, people don't understand. He was part of a comedy team with Stephen Fry in Germany. Yes, he was part of a German comedy team. It's like, in England, he was famous for years. In America, nobody knew who he was. So, anyhow, just and a little. Sidebar into the Mesa.
Well,
there.
I love when I meet somebody who is really accomplished, and they're really like last week I got to work with Yakov Smirnoff, and I said to my friend, "What do you think I'm going to say about Yakov?" And he goes,
"In Russia,
that they're the nicest guy ever." And I go, "Yeah, man, he was the nicest guy ever."
Thing you did
I
when you
that.
Met you met Hugh Laurie. I'm not Hugh Laurie. Rob Lowe was nice to you
but I
on
guess
that
it's
thing.
Like, because if you're not going to say to somebody, "Oh, guess who I met?" If they're not a nice guy, I mean, you're not going to say like, "Oh, guess who this asshole I met?"
You're not
going to
talk
today.
Smack, yeah.
Yeah, you're not really going to.
But
say
on the hand, you know that there's. The bullshit story is always like everybody I work with is fantastic, which makes it sound like it's bullshit when it's true. Because, like, yeah, you never see anybody in Entertainment Tonight. I tell you, Kevin Costner was he's never like, he's an egotistical prick. I have no idea. I've never met Kevin Costner.
Yeah,
but
like,
it's like,
it just
it's always
good...
like it's the greatest person ever.
Yeah, it doesn't make good interview, does it? To be like, yeah, we didn't really speak much. He had an anxious vibe that made me uncomfortable, so I kept my distance.
Also, let's face it, on a movie set or a television set, especially the actors, they're generally happy because they're working.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, I started to have a more honest reaction. Then I went with, because you feel like you should be happy because you're working.
Yeah.
You know how many people want that job?
Yeah.
You know how long it's been since you had one, and there you are. Are you always? Not necessarily. It's weird. You know,
yeah, no.
This is a funny thing about
it. It's always like actors, especially, they're probably neurotic in the first place because that's the way people go into show business. But also, like, what if you are working, you can also be thinking tomorrow I won't be working.
You have lots of
time.
Then
you're like tomorrow I'm working a week. Next week I got nothing. I don't know if I'm going to book anything for a month. And so it's like you think you should be. Yeah, you should be. It's a Midwestern thing too. Like you should be happy. Well, there's a lot of pressure to put on yourself.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
You should be happy.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, in general, though, even if you are filling those things, you're still going to be professional. You're still going to show up. You're still going to do your job.
You'd like to think
and that feels good.
People, you can have all the emotions you want, but I mean, you're still as an actor,
of people are
all of
not.
Sudden,
but you hear
the
stories,
game.
People who aren't professional who bring all their emotion to the, to work, and force other people to. But it's me. I'm always trouble.
Yeah, just
trouble.
You.
Uh-huh. Always
trouble.
Me. Hey, I show up drunk. I'm like, where's the Miata? I got to pee.
Mike, two more questions. One, in the movie In Your Eyes that I rented last night, you can go on Vimeo, you guys, and rent In Your Eyes for only $5, and it's well worth it. It's a beautiful film. It's shot beautifully.
Thanks.
Now, you and your guest, why am I saying this wrong?
Co-star.
You and your co-star, Zoe Kazan, she was not with you in a lot of those scenes.
Yeah, so
how does that work?
Right. So, yeah, the premise is that these people can sort of hear each other and almost like they're in the room with them and almost see through their eyes at times, hence the title In Your Eyes. But they're never in the same place. And it becomes this kind of this love story, but people communicating across the country. And so, yeah, we were hiding under the table. Yeah, you had it right. Yeah, so we were always
on set. You were literally
set.
Doing that, yeah.
Yeah, we were always on set for
together,
each other. We were always in the room nearby.
You would have to have somebody with you. How could you? It would be so hard to just do this in a one-way.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because you're not looking at somebody, and you're not, you're not interacting with them in that way. But, you know, I am. Are you a phone person?
Yeah.
I'm a phone person. Yeah. I think the world's separated into people who definitely are not and people who are. And I am. Like, I like to talk on the phone.
Yeah, me too.
So I'm, like, you know, having a great conversation while I'm sweeping the floor or doing whatever. So it's kind of like that.
Interesting.
So it was actually not as hard as you might think.
Huh.
Because it just sort of felt like that's what you were doing.
Yeah. Oh, it's a beautiful film. I really enjoyed that. Very much so.
Now, unlike a lot of films, did you have a lot of rehearsal time or a fair amount of rehearsal time on this? Because it seems like it would need more rehearsal than shooting an average film where you're always in the facing each other.
I mean, you know, the thing, we didn't do a lot of rehearsal just because, like, once you're, you know, you shoot a film so slowly. It's like, you know, on a day you might do a couple pages. So you don't feel like you need necessarily a ton of rehearsal. But what I did do is some, like, research. This was kind of interesting. I took out an ad on Craigslist because my character was an ex-convict. Mm-hmm. So, and I don't know any ex-convicts
except
or know
that
really
one
what
time
that
you were thrown in jail.
Yeah, but I wasn't convicted.
No, right.
So, but having spent, so I decided to, I was like, I want to talk to convicts about, reintegrating into society, what it's like to try to get a job, what it's like coming out of jail. And I, you know, $40 an hour, meet me at the Starbucks, and I got, like, dozens and dozens of replies, of course, because not a lot of people were offering convicts $40 an hour.
Yeah.
And I met three different people, and it was really interesting.
I love that.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Listen, that's how I think we should get story-worthy guests from now on, Hannes. If we think there's somebody we want, you know, like
so go to patreon.com and give us $40 a month so we can afford
it. I mean, it
paper.
Might be interesting for you guys to just do someone who's not an entertainment, who's like a Craigslist person, bring them in here, and it could be a total shit show. But that could be fun.
Yeah. Oh, believe me, we've already done that. Now, we had this guy, it never aired. It was this guy, contact Christine. He's like, I did this and I did that. And he's one of these guys. And he shows up and it turns out he's like, what was that John Lovitz character? The liar?
I feel
it's
terrible.
Like he just.
Oh, my God.
No, but he was like one of these guys who could convince you of anything while he's talking to you, but everything he said was complete and utter bullshit.
So what happened in the interview?
And well, he just
that no one will ever
talking.
Hear the secret interview.
He stayed in my apartment for like an hour and a half.
This is back when we just
and he was in my apartment for like an hour and a half, and then he left, and we were just like, "What just happened?"
But he kept talking.
We never
right?
aired the show.
He told a story, right? And there were all these people. There were actually quite a few people there at the time, and we're all looking at him. And I know we all had a look on our face, like
5 minutes.
A 5 minute story,
oh,
right?
Whoops,
and he's like talking,
no,
and,
no.
But, and I'm like, "This is." We all just look at our face like. What the fuck are you talking about? So he just kept talking. He was one of those guys. So then he starts into a news story about how he was a teenage, and he was an ambassador to Ireland, but really he was part of a teenage, like, you know,
high
let's be ambassador trip. Things. I was a ambassador for President Reagan. And then it turns out you were 14 when Reagan was in. And it just, and every story would be more like, what the fuck? And then he just. Wouldn't stop.
So that was our shit
talking.
Show. There you go.
Yeah. It's like,
that's
and
amazing.
That dissuaded us from like, let's get people that have like credits or we know who
here's,
they are.
Here's the other question. One more question. do you take any acting classes in Los Angeles that you are happy about?
Yeah, I do UCB here.
Uh-huh.
And then the other thing I do, there's this woman named Kim Gillingham who's already sort of blowing up, but she does this, it's going to sound kind of woo woo. But it's this dream workshop stuff.
Woo.
Yeah.
Woo.
Woo, woo, guys.
Whoa.
It's the way to have an acid trip without taking acid.
Yes.
Dig into that subconscious. It's actually, she's an amazing, amazing teacher.
So is it almost,
and it is,
are you like closing your eyes and she's talking to you?
Oh,
or
yeah. It's like
to,
this meditation-y
oh, wow.
kind of stuff. You get on the yoga mat, you roll around, you make sounds. And you, it's kind of a way to try to like, make your work more meaningful by tying your kind of subconscious stuff that's going on in your life to the role.
Wow, so it looks
at every role as like, why is this role coming to me now? And now I'm a scientific dude. I'm not the most like, you know, superstitious or spiritual guy, but I feel like it's a mind shift, mindset shift. You can engage that way and it can be kind of interesting to say, why is this role coming to me now? What is this? This is a story about somebody who, and where is that in my life and how can I make this personal and meaningful to myself. So she's dope. And if you're an actor who's looking for kind of, she does these classes that are sort of like a yoga class for your heart and spirit. It's pretty amazing.
Again?
Kim Gillingham.
Hey, you want to play some Shotgun Storyworthy?
Let's do it.
Music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the storyworthy wheel of truth and tells a true 1 minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
Accidents. When I was about 11 years old, I'm coming back from soccer practice with my friend Dan Sturmer, and we're in the back of the car where you have to sit like facing the wrong way, you know, the way back without even seats, and I have to pee so bad, and I'm drinking a Coke, and I'm like, come on, I have to pee, and then I just start peeing. As we pull into his garage. And so then I've got the Coke in my hand, and I'm like, oh, no! And I, like, pour it all over my lap. And Dan Sturmer sees that this is, like, a fake pour. And then we get out, and then as we walk up to his porch, and I'm like, oh, shit, I have to pee. I remember, like, getting character. So I'm like, oh, I have to pee. And we go into his house. Then I'm like 11 years old, and I'm like, I feel like a shower. You know, like, never said that in my life. And it was this really interesting thing where I kept the charade going even though I knew that they knew I was lying. And then I think his mom scrubbed my urine out of their car.
That's a perfect story, and a perfect story for an actor. So you started acting at 11, really?
Yeah. I did not win an Oscar for that performance. It was pretty see-through.
Well, nobody's ever spun the story-worthy wheel of truth, landed on accidents, and actually talked about, like, having a pee in your
pissing
pants
pissing themselves. Yeah, I went straight there.
You went right for the real pee in your pants accident. Yep. I appreciate that.
Yeah, but it did involve a car, so that faked me out at first.
Hey, listen.
I thought maybe you were going to cause an accident by
a good story.
The guy turning around,
switch.
Like the dad turning around, like, God damn, why is this kid peeing in my car? And he runs into a tree. So there you go.
Yeah, we had the country squire growing up, and I had to sit in the back facing the other way.
Has anyone ever told, like, he runs into a tree? Has anyone ever told, like, a really dark story in a minute? And then it was just like, and then Dan Sturmer died, and I missed him terribly.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah,
really.
Yeah. I don't know why I can't think of it right now. But
I have to try to kind of recover, or do you just let it be?
No, remember when I told the virginity story on stage, and we got, and I had someone even write to me and say,
"Christine's virginity story is
never tell that story again."
Yes,
it's harrowing.
Not such a good story.
Let's hear it.
It wasn't. It wasn't voluntary. Let's just say. So, and then it's like, but of course,
that's depressing.
My reaction is, I then I'm like. That's awesome. So just because I'm trying to get the story
you're so
back
uncomfortable.
To,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
Listen, Michael, you've got so many exciting things going on. You were just on an NBC sitcom called Two to Go. What happened with that?
Didn't go.
Two to Go did not go.
Yeah. That was
only
a, that
there
was a
were
pilot.
Three.
That was a pilot. I've done two pilots the last couple of years that haven't gone.
How many pilots? Two?
The last 2 years, yeah. That didn't go series, yeah.
But that stuff, that's part
that
of the
happens.
Course. I mean,
that's
people don't realize how many pilots. What was the famous? I think it was... Oh, my
they
brain just went out. The guy who played the entire cast of Friends before they got Friends, if you added up all the pilots that those six actors had done, it was like 100 pilots.
Yeah.
Before they finally, and you know, so they must have been like, by the time they did Friends, they're like, whatever, we'll see
if
this goes. And then
it
runs
probably
for 10
won't.
Years.
Yeah, exactly. It was some of the same producers of Friends this last
time. Oh, really?
You try
that's
not
funny.
To get your hopes up. You just have to kind of ride it out. I mean, because it's such a head game, right?
Yeah, it's crazy. And it's crazy to sign that contract for 7 years. And you're like, do I want it 7 years?
That's the thing. People don't realize is like you're doing a pilot, you sign a contract
before
for the
your
whole
last
show.
Audition.
Before your last audition.
Before
I
they even
say
they want you, you say, okay, well, I'm good for 7 years. It's the most unequal relationship you could imagine. Yeah. Can you imagine like going out with somebody and be like, listen, just so you know, I'm up for 7 years of this? And they're like, well, I don't know if I like you yet, but maybe. You know, that's kind of how
yeah,
it
so
works.
You go into the final audition with producers and all this. And so you have, this is what Brian Reese, our acting teacher that we like, always used to say is like, you need to understand that you're going to sign a piece of paper that says how much money you're going to make.
Yeah.
If you pass
this
final
audition.
But
a trick for actors who don't want to know that, as I tell my, I went through a phase where I did not want to know, so I just told my agents, don't tell me what you settle at. I'm sure it's happy for you. And then I would sign without looking.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I wouldn't even know.
You don't do that anymore, do you?
No, now I know. And it's just like, I don't know. I guess I'm used to managing the stress, you know.
Do you like your agent?
Yeah, my agents are great.
Yeah.
Agents are great.
Do they actually work for you, as it were?
It seems that way. I go on auditions and do
good.
Stuff.
Yeah.
I'm doing something this fall that I'm excited about. I'm working with David Simon, who did The Wire.
Okay, great.
So I'm excited about that. He's got a new miniseries that's about like low-income housing and Yonkers in the late 80s and 90s.
Oh, that'll be interesting. Are you going to New York?
Yeah, I'll be in New York.
For how long?
You'll probably be an anti-graffiti cop because that's how show business works.
Yeah, that's right.
How long will you be there?
I'll be back and forth all fall.
Oh, that's fantastic. Congratulations.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
You live here or you live in New York?
I'm playing like a young political consultant.
Oh, good.
Yeah. But it's just that world. Were you guys into The Wire? Did you guys watch that?
I did not. Did you?
No, yeah, I did. And yeah, like, I was just big. It's very into immersive. That. It's very specific.
Yeah,
it's very specific.
Yeah, he knows how to like write about basically class and race and politics,
urban and like and not
urban
the,
life.
Because yeah, it yeah. wasn't like it's in Manhattan. It's like it was Baltimore. It was like you know.
Yeah,
it was like it, and Yonkers is like. There's no TV show set in Yonkers.
No, and I didn't know anything about this era, but it's a really interesting case.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's exciting. That's, do you know what it's called awesome. Yet?
It's called Show Me a Hero.
Show Me a Hero, and when do you think it'll come out? Like fall 2015?
Yeah, it'll probably come out like summer 2015 yeah. or fall. Yeah.
That must be weird also to work on a project so intently, and then it's so behind you. And
I mean, in your eyes, it was two years.
And then all of a sudden,
by the time you're promoting these things, they're already... out of your system.
It's true. Yeah.
Oh, the life of an actor.
Oh, it's so hard.
So hard.
Yeah. Someone bring
you,
me
man.
More cocaine
Thank
and
you
martini.
So much for coming, really.
Thanks
we
so
really
much. It's a blast.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That was
just,
awesome.
Just a riot. Thank and you. We're going to wrap it up right about now. I did want to thank everybody here at Sideshow Network, including Sean Merrick. Are you there,
he's,
Sean? Are you
no,
with
no,
us?
No. He's spray painting the upper wall.
He's putting commie all over the lobby out there. And on behalf of John Thomas Griffith, you know, Hannes, that's the guy that wrote the theme song, Follow Me.
Never heard of him.
And, of course, our storyteller tonight, Michael Stahl. David, thank you for coming, friend.
Thank
and
you.
And on behalf of you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story-worthy week. You can
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.